Random House Audio presents Lift by Kelly Corrigan. This is the author, Kelly Corrigan. Dear Georgia and Claire, you're both in bed now. Dad, too. I should be sleeping, but I'm wound up. First day of school's tomorrow. Bus comes at 7:44 and won't drop you off until after 3. We don't usually get downstairs before 9. But tonight, shoes are by the front door and backpacks are zipped. You even laid out your clothes so we don't have to argue in the morning. I don't think you'll remember tomorrow or many of the other days we've spent together so far. I only know a handful of stories from before middle school. There was the kiss by the coats in the spring of 5th grade that I pretended was gross, and the time my teacher, who was tall but wore purple heels anyway, asked if anyone knew how to spell chaos, and I wanted to raise my hand so badly and be the one who knew something no one else in my class knew, but I couldn't because I didn't know. I feel that way still, like I wish I knew more, like I wish I had answers. And I remember in 3rd grade, I pulled a tiny foil star off Julia Burr's row and put it on mine so I'd have more. I got caught and was taken to see the principal, who had very short hair that looked burnt on the ends. When she started in on me, Mrs. Ford, my teacher, held out her hand and guided me into her lap. I put part of her long necklace in my mouth. I was very nervous, and she gently took it out so I could concentrate on the principal's thoughts on truthfulness. You guys love that story. You're always asking me to tell you about making mistakes or getting grounded. Like when I was 10 and I tried to get a bug off my dad's windshield by kicking it over and over from the inside until the glass cracked from top to bottom and side to side. Greeny came back to the car after paying for gas, sliding his billfold into his back pocket, and said, "Lovey, what the?" We drove home in silence, Greeny shaking his head like he'd never met a kid with less sense. Those stories are as clear as stains compared to the everyday stuff, like eating ice cream or playing go fish or swimming with my mom in Squam Lake, which I've seen a picture of but can't actually call up inside me. I can't feel the water, or my mom's shoulders under my hands, or her neck under my chin. I can't remember how safe and good it must have felt to ride around on her like that. I heard once that the average person barely knows 10 stories from childhood, and those are based more on photographs and retellings than memory. So even with all the videos we take, the 2 boxes of snapshots under my desk, and the 1,276 photos and folders on the computer, you'll be lucky to end up with 12 stories. You won't remember how it started with us, the things I know about you that you don't even know about yourselves. We won't come back here. You'll remember middle school and high school, but you'll have changed by then. You changing will make me change. That means you won't ever know me as I am right now, the mother I am tonight and tomorrow, the mother I've been for the last 8 years, every bath and book and birthday party gone. It won't hit you that you're missing this chapter of our story until you see me push your child on a swing, or untangle his jump rope, or wave a bee away from his head and think, is this what she was like with me? The last time we went to Philly to see your grandparents, Jammy taught you how to play dominoes while I checked my email. I listened as she explained the rules and stages, showing you all the ways to score until she was sure you understood. When you bagged your first point, she helped you move your peg up the board, winking and clicking her tongue and saying jokey stuff like, "By Georgia, I think you've got it." When I was little, I don't think she winked or clicked or punned. And my coming of age? Imagine one long string of cursing, crying, and lying, followed by stomping and slamming, punctuated by the occasional kindness. "These eggs are good," or "Is your knee feeling better?" Jammy must have cut those moments into tiny pieces and rationed them to herself. For all she knew, it'd be a month until I fed her another morsel of affection. I don't know when you'll read this. Maybe when you're a teenager. No, probably later, when you're on the verge of parenthood, and it occurs to you for the first time that someone has been loving you for that long. Maybe, let's hope not, you'll read it because something's happened to one of us. My cancer came back. Or Dad was reading a text going across the Bay Bridge and cars collided, and you want to piece together what it was like before. No matter when and why this comes to your hands, I want to put down on paper how things started with us. I always wanted kids, more than all other things. Not very Harvard Business School of me, I know. There are other things I want to do, big, crazy things, like make a movie and build an artist's compound and fix my printer. But at night, in the years before I met your dad, when I was talking to a God I wasn't sure I really believed in, I whittled down all my requests to one. Children. You. Greenie has this huge family and I love being inside something that big. I love the noise and hugging and high-fiving and how we tell the same 10 stories every time we're together. And after that, we tell the same 6 jokes, all of which have titles, like Precious and Probably and the Sport Coat joke, which Uncle Dickie delivers with a Scottish accent and a hair lip for no reason anyone can give. I remember once in college climbing on stage with a band. The music was so loud, the bass line came right up from the floor into my body. That's what it's like being in a room full of Corrigans. Kathy is my favorite. She's one of Uncle Gene's 7 kids, which I think explains her self-reliance and therapist's eye for interpersonal drama. I like her because she's so totally unguarded. I've always wanted to be like Kathy, and over the years I've tried on various parts of her. I mimic her one-sentence emails in all lowercase letters. I listen to John Prine and early Bonnie Raitt. I clutter my bookshelves with unframed photographs, old lunchboxes, and homemade art. She's why I cut my hair short every couple of years and wear bandanas when it's too hot to turn on a blow dryer. I read the books she sends me and the poets she mentions. She introduced me to Rilke, who has this line about how some harmonies can only come from shrieking, and another about how when crystal shatters, it also rings. The Rilke line that's up on my bulletin board is, "The knowledge of impermanence that haunts our days is their very fragrance." So many true and delicate thoughts that prose can't touch. Promise me you'll read him. Kathy took a job teaching high school English because she loves reading and talking about books, especially the things people accidentally reveal by empathizing with one character over another, or hating a story too much, or crying over a certain passage. But more than reading, she loves her students. The pregnant girls, the sassy girls that call her Mrs., the boys who look at her chest too long. I sat in on her class once at Charlottesville High and left thinking, God, she's important. I remember this one Corrigan wedding, Cousin Boo's. Kathy and I were sitting by the dance floor, picking at an unclaimed piece of cake, the way you do when you've already had enough and think you might just have one more bite, and then the other person joins in, and then you're sweeping up the last of the icing with the backs of your forks. Her kids, all 3 of them, were on the dance floor together. I guess they were in middle school, or just starting high school. Lena was doing this move where you pull one foot behind you, like you're stretching your thigh after a run. And Maggie was trying to moonwalk, and Aaron, the oldest, was doing the sprinkler. "That's all I want, Kath. Right there, funny kids who like each other." She leaned into me and said, "It'll come. You'll get it. Oh, look." Just then, Aaron and some other guys lifted Kathy's husband, Tony, over their heads, and Tony crowd surfed, like Jack Black in the last scene of School of Rock. People went nuts, cheering or reaching for their cameras or looking around for the father of the bride to see how this was going over with him. Over all the laughing and hollering, I could hear Aaron's voice. "Stay stiff, Dad, like Superman." Dad and I were still opening wedding presents when I started to think about getting pregnant. I'd watched so many friends struggle. Tracy's 7 in vitros, Marianne's 3 miscarriages, Christy's baby born still. Dad and I were lucky, if lucky is a big enough word for it. Another way of putting it is that we were spared years of torment. Here's a third way of saying it.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?